Welcome to Last Games Night on Earth, a podcast where we discuss if you were given just one last games night, what would you wish for? My name is James, and this is the Dungeons & Flagons podcast. Hello, dear listener. Welcome to the podcast again. We're joined by Corey this week. You might remember him from the DFT episode that we did a few weeks ago about his now successfully launched Kickstarter. How are we doing, Corey?
Yeah, not so bad. Glad that the Kickstarter has gone as well as it has. We're currently sitting at just over £1,600 pledged from people, which is absolutely fantastic.
Amazing.
We've hit every single stretch goal, which has been wild. Not something we honestly expected to do. Like, obviously, you hope. But
yeah, oh, that's awesome, man. So what's next?
A big takeaway, I think.
Fair enough. So we're here today to talk to you about your last games night on Earth. Seems like quite a fun one. I'm excited to get into it. You ready to go?
Yeah, for sure. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's prepare for death.
What is your first course? What game are you serving first?
So probably want to start off with like a bit of a get-to-know-you one.
Okay,
so yeah. So I'd probably want to start with the roleplay game that I chose, Danger Patrol.
Cool, yeah. So this one's a new one to me. To try and have a little look up about it, and the only thing I could find on YouTube was a video with a puppet talking about it, which was interesting. Would you want to tell us a little bit about it first?
Yeah, so it's by John Harper, who maybe is a bit more famous for one of his newer projects, which is called Blades in the Dark.
Oh yeah, we've got that.
Yeah, Blades in the Dark, it's that guy.
I didn't make that connection. All right, that's awesome.
But yeah, it's one of his earlier projects. It never really got out of beta.
Yeah, we saw that.
Which is a shame, because it's this really neat, like, 1950s pulp sci-fi silly game.
Cool. Is there a reason it never got out of beta? Or did he just...
Not that I am aware of. Maybe it's just, you know, didn't really take off, didn't...
Yeah, oh, fair enough.
Didn't capture enough people. You know, it happens. Like, even great games can sort of fall through the cracks if they don't reach the right people at the right time and all that.
Fair enough. Why do you like it?
So I first came across this game at an online convention a few years ago called ComfyCon.
All right. So before online conventions were cool.
Yeah, it was something completely new to me. It's run by, or was run when it goes by, Randy Milholland, who does the Something Positive webcomic, who is famous for coming up with the Rocks Fall, Everyone Dies joke.
Yeah.
And he just basically put on a convention for people who couldn't get to other conventions. And there was this space available, and you know, I took it and played in a game by someone who makes another webcomic that I really enjoy. And it's just this really fun, fast-flowing, wacky system. Like I say, it's a sort of 1950s pulp. It's sort of like Buck Rogers, Star Trek-esque, but if every character was Zap Brannigan.
All right, yeah.
So it's a lot of fun with loads of loose rules, which really lets you get into that sort of getting to know people around the table, like kind of thing, like how they play games, how they interact with each other, everything like that. It's a really good convention game. I think it was originally designed as like a travel game. So all the character sheets are on two little playing cards that you sort of, one half is who you are, so like could be a robot or a, I think, atomic or something. And then the other half is your role, so you could be a warrior, a professor, a flyboy, things like that. And it's just absolutely wild because the game encourages you to do silly things to get more dice. So it's that really nice sort of everyone gets to sit at the table and just be wacky rather than some of the more serious role plays where I don't feel like I'd want to get bogged down in something particularly angsty on my last night on Earth. I'd want something light and happy. you know?
Yeah, something you can just whack out and play. All right, cool. Have you got any, like, memorable moments of playing Danger Patrol?
Well, in my first game where I played a robot fighter who was Crow-Man the Barbarian, which was a lot of fun. I got to detach my robot head and, you know, act independently of my body, which was a lot of fun sneaking around a museum. And I say sneaking. He had sirens in his head. He was not so cool. And then I think one of my other favorite memories was when I ran it for a group of people who were sort of new to role-playing. And I ran a game based on the question, who would win in a fight, a field of cows or a field of people? So we had them fighting cow, like they had to foil the evil plot of cow aliens who wanted to make the entire Earth lactose intolerant.
I would hate that. I already have a fear of cows.
Right, they're terrifying. They're so big.
They've just got an evil look. Whenever I'm walking through a field, and they just seem to be looking at me like, we're going to get you.
Yeah, I've watched a group of cows charge at a rugby team to protect a rugby ball that had been kicked in the field like it was some sort of weird cow egg. Like, they scare me.
No, it sounds really fun. Bit of a shame that it's not fully... It's still available on his website and stuff.
Yeah, so you can still get it. You can still go download the beta version. It's not amazing for, like, campaign play, really. It's very much a... let's pull this out, let's do something fun, let's just be weird for an hour or two.
Yeah, bit of a one-shot wonder.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, you can still get that, still download it all. It's really high quality. He just produces consistently fantastic stuff, and I'm really glad that Blades in the Dark has taken off as much as it has for him, because he's just very, very good at roleplay design.
So why did you pick Danger Patrol over Blades in the Dark for your last game tonight? Is it just personal preference?
Personal preference, and Blades in the Dark is a different kind of game where there's a little bit more of a grim grittiness to it that, like I say, it's my last night on Earth. I wanna relax with my friends. I wanna be weird and stupid. I don't wanna think about the impending inevitability of shuffling off my mortal coil. Like, I don't want that.
Fair enough. Who would you recommend it to?
Anyone who has any interest in silly role-playing. If you're the kind of person who enjoys sitting around the table with your mates, telling jokes and being stupid and improv, this is great. Great for you. This is just... it's designed to harness that sort of wild energy of a bunch of people who want to have a good time.
Oh, nice.
And anyone who wants to do that sit around and crack jokes thing, that's for them.
Cool. You've sold it to me. I might have to check it out.
Yeah, just go check it out. It's completely free because it never got out of beta, so, you know, all it costs you is the printer paper if you even want to do that.
Awesome. Where are we going to now? Do you want to talk about where you play any games?
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I sort of wanted to be greedy and fold things like music and atmosphere in into location.
No worries. Where are you staging your last games like?
So I'm going to be weirdly sentimental here and say that I want to have it in, like, my parents' living room in the house I grew up in.
Okay.
But I want it to be, like, decked out with... like an ambient sound system. Like over lockdown, I've gotten really into playing like an ambient sound while I'm running roleplay games. And I think that just adds something really fun to it. But I'd want to be in my parents' house, because I think there's something just really, really nice about being somewhere not perfect with a bunch of friends or a bunch of people you're playing games with, and it just all falling away. Like, you're somewhere you're comfortable, but it ultimately doesn't matter. And I think I think the place that sort of sums up that comfort that I can ignore best is that house that I grew up in.
Oh, amazing. So your parents' front room. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So with the ambient sound system, are you talking like what sort of ambience are you going for? Ambience.
I've actually found a website called mynoise.net where there's just a bunch of like looped white noise and fantasy soundscape. Like there's some like drum based ones, there's ones with bagpipes and stuff. So what I would like to do is, because I normally do this for myself when I'm running games, I'd like to have someone there to like mix these ambient sounds all together as we're playing. Like, you know, Welcome to Night Vale, the podcast, has like Disparition, who does all their live shows with them and does the music as they go. I want that.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. All right. Anything else you want to add in for location?
No, I suppose I'd like the tables and the chairs to be a little bit probably comfier. You know, as much as I enjoy that low quality feel to a place almost when I'm role playing, because it doesn't matter, I would quite like a comfy chair or a table that,
like a proper professional game table.
Yeah, something like that. Just, you know, something that's gonna aid the experience rather than, you know, being a dining room table that's best fit.
Fair enough. Have you ever seen the is it Geek and Sons who have that, like, they always bring it to big conventions and it's like a old-fashioned carriage that's a table, like a game table. You ever seen that?
No, I've not seen that. I've seen the game store that come in a bus.
I really want to get like a game table, but they're just so expensive.
Yeah, I want one of those. Have you seen like those circular ones that extend as you spin them? Like, that's my dream.
Yeah,
it just looks so cool.
Have you seen the table topper that me and Zoe made a couple of years ago?
No, I think I missed that one.
Yeah, so we just got bored one day in summer, so we went down to the local timber yard, bought a load of wood. We built like a little table topper for our front room coffee table, just to make it into like a little game table. It actually works really well, and it cost about £30.
Nice.
Cool. So what's coming out next after Danger Patrol?
Okay, so I think after getting to know everyone, you know, with the wacky fun adventure of Danger Patrol, I think I'd want to play something where I can then exploit knowing people for benefit in the game and betray them horribly.
All right, we're talking a social deduction game.
We're talking Shadowhunters.
Excellent.
The game out of Japan. Let me have a look for the actual pronunciation. Shadowhunters. Game Republic, isn't it? Yeah.
So it was Game Republic in Japan, Z-Man Games in the US, and it's Yasutaka Akida, I think is hopefully how you pronounce it. Apologies if not. But yeah, we've got a copy of this in the DNF library. Somebody gave it to us early on. So it gets played at DNF pretty much every week by at least one or two groups. I had a look online for it, and I think it's out of print now. It's very hard to track down, but apparently it was re-implemented into Fangs, which doesn't quite have the same ring to it, does it?
No, it doesn't. That's weird. I mean, it's a fairly simple game in terms of, you know, actual mechanics and everything. Aesthetically, it's great. I really love the like gothic anime, like Helsing-esque vibe to it.
The Fangs version looks a bit Twilighty, vampires Ooh. Versus werewolf.
Okay, that's it? Interesting.
It's not anything like the Shadowhunters theme, unfortunately.
Vampires versus werewolves, I could go in for that anyway. There's nothing
wrong with it. It just doesn't. I don't think it looks as cool as the Shadowhunters theme.
Yeah, that's fair. It did have a really like that theme is really cool. Like the super like almost edgy anime.
Yeah. Do you want to just give us a quick rundown? Because I'll be honest, although it gets played probably once or twice every week at Dungeons & Flagons, I've never actually managed to play it. I don't know how.
So basically, there are three teams. Only two of them really matter, but there's shadows, which are your monsters, your vampires, your werewolves, your whites, your, you know, griblies in the night.
Yeah.
Then there's the hunters, the people that track them down. There's also the neutrals who are just, you know, regular schmoes who got roped into the conflict between darkness and light, as, you know, it happens to the best of us. And basically the idea is for the shadows to get rid of the hunters and the hunters to get rid of the shadows. The neutrals have all got their own thing going on.
Is it the neutrals that all have, like, their own objective, like an individual objective?
Yeah, they've got an individual objective, but there are ways in which they can win or lose if the hunters win or lose. It gets a little bit complicated with higher players. I don't want to read the rule book out to people. They can play it themselves. It's fun. But basically, no one knows who else at the table is a shadow, a hunter, or a neutral. You've got to figure it out by how they act and by using the cards in the game. So the idea is to find out who is on your team and who's against you, and then murder them.
You go to different locations on the board, don't you? And they let you pick up different cards, and one of them, is it the green location? Is always kind of like deduction kind of based things. So you read the card and then you hand it to somebody and they have to act in a certain way depending on...
Yeah. Basically, I'm pretty sure it's three sets of cards. Black cards, white cards, and green cards. Black cards are like your offensive weapons, generally. Yeah. Generally, your white are your defensive. There's a couple of offensive things in there, but mostly it's defensive and heals and stuff. Hmm. And then green cards or hermit cards are your deduction. So a lot of the hermit cards are like, if you're a shadow, take one damage. If you're a hunter, heal three damage, things like that.
Yeah.
Basically, you've got to figure out everything based on how people react to those cards, and you'll keep track of who everyone is. And every card, every character card, like hunter, shadow, neutral, has an ability that you can reveal to enact. So the werewolf is, it gets to attack twice.
Yeah.
There's a hunter who has like a magic shield that means they don't take damage for a full round. You know, so the various things are where you want to reveal at different times. Yeah, based on all the information you have and keeping track of how people treat each other, you're supposed to sort of work out who everyone is. And,
who's on which side.
And fulfill your win condition.
Ah, cool. How do you feel about the player elimination?
I think it can be a lot of fun. And I say this because I think my best memory of Shadowhunters that I'm never going to top, I'm absolutely never going to beat this. I played a character called the Unknown, whose special ability is when you're given a green card, you can lie.
All right, yeah. That is pretty cool.
Right? So I'd spent this entire game sort of lying to various people, and everyone had figured out who everyone else was based on me. At which point, someone near the end of the game trades me a really powerful weapon. As like, I know you're on my side, I'm going to give you this, and you're going to punch the other person who's definitely my enemy. At which point I turn around and smack them with the really powerful weapon and eliminate them, and the entire game just changes, because everyone goes, oh, we don't know who anyone is again.
Oh, little shit.
Absolutely.
From what I know about it is, because obviously player elimination in board games is always one of those topics that splits people quite a lot.
Hmm.
Some people love it, some people hate it, some people despise it. But for me, I think it kind of depends on when it happens. And from what I understand about Shadowhunters is, once players start getting eliminated, it's not very long after that that the game kind of ends. It's very rare that somebody will get eliminated and then the game goes on for like 45 minutes, which isn't too bad for me. I feel like it's the games where you can possibly be eliminated and then the other people play for another hour that just don't like them that much.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the soft speed of Shadowhunters when it gets going is one of its big advantages, because it's very much a domino effect. When someone is figured out, suddenly everything else clicks into place and everyone knows, all right, they're on that team, which means they're on that team, which means they're on that team and that team and that team. And then it sort of spirals very quickly.
Right.
And the game changes entirely, which I think is a really cool thing to have in it, because it just means that the game has two phases. Like, it's almost two games in one without ever really writing that into the rules. It's just how it sort of plays out.
Which is just great
design. And I think there are going to be times where people get eliminated really early on and it's kind of naff, but because of how quick the game is, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, because when you die, you also have to reveal what side you're on, don't you?
See, this is one of those that always confused the group I played with, because I think it's a you can choose to reveal who you are.
All right, I thought it was that you had to.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether that's just a rule we homebrewed in because it was funny,
yeah,
or whether it's in the actual rule book. After a certain number of games, you just stop paying attention to the rule book unless something really weird comes up.
Yeah, it's like free parking in Monopoly. Everyone has their own interpretation of the rules, but it's not actually in the rule book. fair enough. It seems quite thematic for a social deduction game. I know, like, some social deduction games are quite fun to play, but the theme doesn't really fit the game that much. Like, for instance, like Resistance Avalon, it's a good game. You could change that theme, apply it, you know, put a different skin on the game, and it still would make complete sense.
Mm.
And obviously, I know, like, at DNF, they've kind of, like, they play a rule where when they go on the missions, because obviously in the actual game, it doesn't actually tell you to what the missions are or anything. You're just going on a mission. They always kind of make a little story to make fit what the mission they're going on. Whereas in Shadowhunters, you're going to these different locations to do different things. So it seems quite cool.
Yeah, it does really carry that theme through quite well, where it is that blend, that sort of like anime blend of really serious and then really silly in parts.
Yeah.
That just sort of helps you treat the whole thing seriously but as clearly a bit of fun, if you follow me. Like, because obviously it's all very dark and gritty, and there's vampires and people hunting the vampires and they're all dying and things like that, which is, you know, quite dark conceptually. But then there's stuff that appears, like there's a banana peel, where if you're trying to get a weapon, there's a chance that you pick a banana peel card, slip on it and do some damage to yourself.
Yeah.
Just helps keep it a little bit lighthearted, which I think is very cool.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite role?
I think I generally prefer the shadows, but that's because ever since I was very small, I've really liked vampires and monsters and stuff. Like, I used to spend like hours on the high school computers looking up like wikis for different monsters and reading all about the folklore and stuff, because I am a huge nerd.
So who are you inviting on to your parents' front room?
So I've really struggled with this, because I wouldn't really, I don't think, want to invite veteran role players and board gamers and everything, because I don't know, there's a lot of pressure there. Like, I wouldn't want to invite my favorite author in case the story I told, because I'd be running the role play game, I'd be running Danger Patrol, in case the story I told wasn't like up to scratch, like I'd just feel all that pressure.
Yeah.
So in the end, the person I settled on, because I could only settle on one, was Guy Fieri.
Okay. Who's that?
Guy Fieri, the guy from Drive-Ins, Diners, and Dives or something, I think. But is like an American fast, like celebrity chef for fast food almost. And his show is him just going around all these little like local places in America and just eating horribly unhealthy food.
And
you've definitely seen pictures of him. Like, he's got his bleach blonde, like spiky tipped hair, he's got his shirt, like a black shirt with flames on the bottom. He's always wearing wraparound shades, and he's got cargo shorts on. He's usually sort of pointing at the camera and like yelling, but like in a happy way, like he's just in an excited way. He's got a goatee as well. Like,
oh yeah, I've googled him, and yeah. I recognize him.
Yeah.
All right. So why would you invite him?
He is so hype about everything. He loves finding just little things about whatever it is he's doing and going, this is great. This is the best thing ever. This is amazing. And I think that's just the type of person I love playing games with. I'm just someone who can go, yeah, this is great. And just sort of lift the energy of the room up.
Cool.
Plus, you know, he's got that whole fire aesthetic going on, which fits in with the fact that death is coming for me in this scenario. So, you know.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Yeah, that kind of energy really makes games really fun. Somebody who you can just tell is genuinely excited to be playing. Anybody else, or is it just him?
I think it'd be him, and then I'd probably get like a rotating cast of friends in. You know, I've got my friends who do role playing. I've got my friends who do board gaming. There is some crossover, but like some of my role play friends don't really do board games. Some of my board game friends don't really do role play.
So you just want your friends delivered on a conveyor?
Yeah, basically to swap out as appropriate.
Which friend is most appropriate for which game?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, maybe they could all play like a round of Shadowhunters, and then when their character dies, they can get cycled in for a different friend who can play the next round, that kind of thing, you know.
They just get like zapped out.
Yeah, just zapped out. They get replaced by a different friend who's wearing the same outfit and no one talks about it.
Sometimes I wish I could replace some of my friends for different friends in certain situations.
Yeah, very nice backwheeling there. That was nice.
Just sit there like thinking, oh, it'd be much better if so-and-so was here, not you.
I'm going to choose to not take that personally and pretend that you're wanting to replace other people with me. That's what I'm choosing to do here.
You do you. No, of course not. Of course I don't think that. That'd be a really weird thing to admit on a podcast.
It would.
Sometimes I just sit thinking, I wish you weren't here.
You specifically should
go. Well, we just got something for the blooper reel. Right, so guess is Guy Fieri?
I've always said Guy Fieri, but I have gotten words wrong in the past, so...
We'll just go with... So, guess, Guy, and your friends on rotation.
Yeah, you know, just making sure everyone has a nice, happy, fun time.
Excellent. So what are we ending the night on?
So, as much as I love roleplay games and board games, I personally would always say I'm more of a war gamer.
All right, cool.
So I think I'd want to end on a war game.
So is this your favourite war game, or is this the war game that you would choose for an end of night?
So this is the game that I played the longest and the most intensely. This is sort of like a comfortable pair of shoes in terms of my gaming. Like,
all right, cool.
Like, it's just the one that I'd when I think, oh, I'd like to just sit and play a game, it's the one that most often comes to mind, and I'd like to pick Guild Ball.
Excellent. So, by Matt Hart and Richard, is it Loxham?
It's Loxham, yeah. It's Steamforge Games. Matt Hart and Richard Loxham came up with it at, what, 2015 or something? And then as Steamforge Games grew, it ended up being developed by a couple of friends of mine, Jamie Perkins and Bryce Johnston, and Steve Margetson and Fraser Petridge. I know the development team is what I'm saying before I continue reeling off names.
Just going to do a little bit of a name drop.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fair enough. Yeah. Do you want to give us the lowdown on this game?
So it's steampunk football with swords. So this is football in the British sense, or like the non-American sense, at least, I guess. So it's soccer for anyone who doesn't know what football is.
5% of our listenership is in America.
There you go, 5% just threw you a bone there. But yeah, so the aim is to get to 12 points, and you get to 12 points through a combination of goal scoring and assaulting the other team. So there's combat. It's like a moving capture the flag scenario almost with the ball, because you've got to get the ball to the opposition goal and you've got to score. I played this game really intensely throughout university and the years around that just afterwards. I really enjoyed going to tournaments. I did passingly well at them, not to toot my own horn, but I came 10th in a tournament called Vengeance, which had around 120 people in it.
So that
was nice. I felt good about that. And yeah, it's just one of those games that, because of like the tightness of the rules, like it's a super well-balanced rule set and a really well-made game and well-designed game. And I'm genuinely not just saying that because I know the designers. Like, I thought this before I got to know them. It's just a really good game that relies on the skill of the player, and right. Sort of that's a really, really good thing in war games, because obviously you've got some war games that can a little bit depend on the size of the wallet of the person involved versus the actual skill they have at the game.
So just on that point, does Guild Ball, does it work as you buy, do you make your own teams? Do you buy like individual like team players, or do you buy the whole team as one?
So you buy sets of teams, or you did actually. Probably worth saying that Guild Ball is now no longer supported by Steamforged. They discontinued it like summer last year, and it's now run by people in the community, who the Guild Ball community project, actually really good at keeping the hype of that game alive. They're doing some great stuff, and I would genuinely say go check out the Guild Ball community project. Even if you're just interested in how games communities function, because they're really good at what they're doing. But basically what you would do is the game is separated into different factions called guilds, and you would buy a set of players for that guild. Each guild ended up with 13, 14 players-ish, I think, by the end of it. It depended on the guild as to how many players they had, but each one ended up with that many, and you could only have six of them on the field at the time. Yeah. And so you'd buy multiple sets and swap them out and make the optimized team for the meta at the time, as you do with war games. And yeah, my team was called the Union. They were like the mercenary faction. So they, a load of their players for ages could play for other teams as well, which was really cool. It was captained by a guy called Rage, who was basically, if you've ever seen Gangs of New York, Daniel Day-Lewis's character, Butcher Bill, he's based on that. So he was a very well-turned-out gentleman with a top hat and a cigar and a meat cleaver. Oh. And his thing was he wasn't great at football, but he loved to punch people. And I enjoyed that. It was fun.
Sounds like a fun game. Is it quite quick playing? How long does a game usually take?
So around 90 minutes-ish.
Like a game of football?
Yeah. It's on the quicker end of war games, but it's not quick. It can get quite intense. It can go quite a while. And there were times when I'd play like 4 or 5 hour games, but that's mostly because I was just chatting with people as we played. Like, we'd all sit around a table, there'd be two of us playing, and five of us sat around all chatting, which was great.
Hmm. Excellent. Have you got anything else you'd like to say about Guild Ball?
No, go check out the Guild Ball community project. They are really cool. They've got fan fiction, they've got fan art. They're just gearing up for their first like major release as a project, if you can call it that, where they're doing a bit of an errata to, you know, keep the game in balance, even though people are like, it's not a living game anymore, if you follow. It's not like a thing that the company is keeping alive. It's them that's doing it.
Right, so for the third accompaniment, what have you chosen to add into your games night?
So I think I'd probably just want to go with like a big takeaway, if I'm honest. Uh-huh. I'm a very simple person at least. And I just like having like a local takeaway. Like,
yeah.
I think it'd probably end up being a mix of the various local takeaways I've loved and lost throughout my life. So like the one near my parents that we'd always get on the Thursday evenings when we'd play my first D&D campaign, they did a great pepperoni pizza. There's the ones...
It's always really sad when you move away from a great pepperoni pizza.
Yeah, right? Like, I think the one I'm a little bit more sad about, though, is I moved away from somewhere, like, this year, I moved away from the place that does my favourite kebabs that I've come across. Like, they do a proper lovely mixed kebab. And I moved away from there, so I probably have, like, a couple mixed kebab from that place.
See, like, kebabs are just too heavy for me. Like, if I had a kebab on a games night, I'd be like, I'm done now. I'm going to go and have a nap.
No, see, you want, like, the proper, like, big mixed kebabs that's, like, got a load of salad and sauce in. Because then it's just...
Oh, it's healthy then.
Food. Yeah, it's one of your five. Then.
I once used a kebab as a pillow.
See, I've never gotten that bad. Like, I've had one next to me when I've fallen asleep.
I woke up and I just had my head on a kebab. And I was like... Anyway. Student. I've grown up since then. I no longer do that.
Yeah, now it's on the tasteful side table by your bed.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, you're having a lovely selection of your past takeaway triumphs.
Yeah, I think so.
Excellent. So is there anything else you'd like to add to make it perfect? The game's not the kebab.
No, I don't think so.
Have you ever put pepperoni on a doner kebab?
I have. They're very good. It's just the extra spices and... Oh, I need a kebab.
I know. I was literally thinking.
I'm going to have a kebab tonight. To celebrate the Kickstarter, when it finishes at 8:30 this evening, when we're recording, I'm going to have a big kebab, I think.
Oh, you'll have to... I can't remember the name of it, but me and my housemate found a place the other day that did like, it was like £15 kebab and it had like 8 different things on it. It was filthy. Anyway.
we can't stop. Like, tune in next week for our new podcast, Kebabs of Manchester.
We should totally do that. Right, okay, so ABCD, what are you going for?
Let's go with C.
Okay.
I like to pick C. It's the safe answer. Always pick C.
You've got yourself a fact.
Ooh.
A rabbit's nose can twitch more than 120 times a minute.
Wow.
This is why people come to the podcast.
I wonder what for, though. Like, that's half a fact at best, James. Like, come on.
Right, have you got anything you'd like to plug, Corey?
Well, by the time this comes out, my Kickstarter will be over, so I can't really plug that. So if you could go follow Hivemind Games on social media, that's at Hivemind Creates on Twitter. It's Hivemind Games on Facebook, and we are Hivemind Games Co. on Instagram.
So you can keep up to date with the next exciting project.
Yeah, there's going to be some behind-the-scenes stuff for this project, you know, some production stuff as we go along with it. Like, we'll probably share some of the cool art we get, some work-in-progress stuff. And, yeah, there'll be future projects. Like, I'm pretty sure the document containing here's what we could do next ideas is 6 or 7 pages long now.
Excellent.
So yeah, there's going to be some cool stuff coming out soon.
On the up and up. Great. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming and discussing your last Games Night on Earth with us, Corey. Hope you had fun.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me and reminding me of all of those delicious kebabs.
Right. Put the salad on. Play the intro. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us about anything at all, find us on social media with @LGNOEpodcast or email us at lastgamesnightonearth@outlook.com. If you enjoyed it, please consider telling at least one person. It's the best way to help spread podcasts. And if you want to help support Dungeons & Flagons' events in the future and keep the podcast going, check out our Patreon by searching Dungeons & Flagons. I've been James, and this has been Last Games Nights on Earth, a podcast by Dungeons & Flagons. Thank you.